You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
I'm Matthew Leach, talking National League East with MLB.com's five NL East beat reporters. We'll be going around talking to Bill Watson about Anthony Rendon and the Nats' health situation. We'll be talking a lot of health. We're going to be talking about the health of Daniel Murphy and Wilmer Flores when we talk Mets. We'll be talking about the health of prospect J.P. Crawford and what they're going to do in the middle infield there when we talk Philadelphia Phillies. And we're going to talk about the Atlanta Braves starting rotation. MLB.com Extras.
Talking Washington Nationals with MLB.com's Nationals beat reporter, Bill Ladson. Bill, they could not have made a wrong decision as far as an opening day starter. But among other things, they made the high-dollar and Cy Young winning decision with Max Scherzer. What went into that decision to make Scherzer the guy?
Well, his record the last 6 years, 82 wins, won a Cy Young. He definitely deserves it based on that. And he was pretty happy about it. He admitted early in the day that he was disappointed that he didn't get the opening nod last year after winning the Cy Young, but this makes up for it big time, and he loves it.
Sometimes some clubs will use some tactical decisions in making these kind of setups. They want somebody to face a particular opponent, don't want somebody to face an opponent, want somebody to pitch indoors or on the road or whatever. Is there any of that in setting up the Nationals rotation, or is it just simply a matter of go with the guy who's got the Cy Young award?
I think it's go with the guy who has a Cy Young. I mean, everyone on this staff is good enough to start that opening day. Strasburg, as you know, did it the last 3 years, and this time is going to be Scherzer, and you know he's having a great spring. I mean, he leads the team in strikeouts this spring, and he's doing everything they said he was going to do.
Yunel Escobar has made his return to active duty. That's a pretty big deal, one, because he's expected to be a pretty big part of this team, but also they've dealt with a lot of injuries now and to start getting some guys back. How's Escobar look to you?
Escobar looked great. He's over the grade one oblique strain, and what impressed me wasn't so much the infield hit, was the diving play off Brett Gardner. He dove to his left and made the play. The run scored, yeah, but it told me right there that this guy can play some serious defense and he's okay.
It's interesting because he's been kind of an up-and-down guy defensively. He was a couple of years ago an underrated defender and a very good shortstop, even if nobody knew it. Kind of a rough year last year. Just from both what you've seen in limited time this spring, but also the club's expectation, do they expect him to be a real plus second baseman?
No question about it. And, you know, the thing that I noticed right away, the guy works hard. I mean, the moment he came into camp, he wanted extra work to work at second base. This is a guy that hasn't played second base since 2007. So, I mean, he realizes he needs work. And the way he was going before the injury, I mean, the team was like, oh, my God, this guy really loves to work. So this was Escobar that asked for the extra work, not the team. So that was a great sign right there. And Escobar has been great with us in terms of the media, and it's a great sign.
Elsewhere in the infield, it sounds like maybe they're making some contingency plans regarding Anthony Rendon. There's been some talk of Danny Espinosa maybe seeing some time at third base. It seems like they are maybe not looking at a long time, but at least figuring out what plan B is as far as doing without Anthony Rendon.
Yes, Matt Williams is figuring out plan B, and Ian Stewart's been getting most of the playing time. In fact, Ian Stewart had the day off today because he was playing every day for the last 2 weeks, and he's done well. He's done really well. And it wouldn't surprise me now if Rendon went on the disabled list because Matt Williams was not what you call enthusiastic when he told us that he was still sore. So he didn't say he was going on the disabled list, but by the tone of his voice that he could be going on the DL.
Is it reasonable to think that this early with a guy that important, you err on the side of caution rather than worrying about an arbitrary deadline like opening day?
Yeah, they're going to err on the side of caution. And, you know, I'm just telling you, he's been healthy all year since he's been to the big leagues. And now to hit this knee problems, and he's been having the knee problems since early in spring training. So it's really too bad. So what's going on?
The other end, it seems like pretty encouraging as far as Steven Strasburg. He had an ankle issue, but is it fair to say that's a very minor deal?
Minor deal, no question about it. He's had bullpen sessions, going to have another one tomorrow during the day off, and I expect to make his start by the end of the week.
So will he be handled extra carefully or anything? Is there any precautions? Or when he's back, is he just back?
Matthew, they always handle him with precaution. It doesn't matter. It's been that way since day one. But he's going to be ready for opening day. Matt Williams is not worried about that. From a pitching standpoint, the Nationals have nothing to worry about there.
I wanted to ask you, we talked last week about Clint Robinson, a guy who's really hit a lot this spring. And I looked him up. The guy's spent 3 years raking at AAA. So my question is, why hasn't he gotten more of a shot? He's a 30-year-old who's raked at AAA.
Great question. After I wrote my story about him, I went to him and I said, hey, your stats are pretty good. What's going on here? Well, he was under Hosmer in Kansas City, and that was part of the problem. And then he went to Toronto. He admitted he had a bad year there. And then with the Dodgers, just simply wasn't given a chance. So it was more of a numbers game with him than anything else. I even checked to see if he was in trouble at any time, and he was not in trouble. And he's been, as you say, he's been raking since he's been here. And for his sake, I hope he gets a chance to be in the big leagues.
For a team that, you know, you've talked a lot, and it's not any great secret, but I know it's something you've written about a lot. This team needs bench help. It needs bats off the bench. Is there a realistic opportunity for him to be one of those guys?
It could be. It really depends. You know, personally, looking from what I see, I don't think Danny Espinosa should be on the bench right now because he's not hitting. And you got to ask, can he keep it up the next 2 weeks? But I think he has a chance. I think it's right now, I have to say 50-50 for Clint. And hopefully things will change for him.
Given the number of things they're dealing with, especially in the infield, but really all over, and presumably a need for some sort of versatile parts and moving parts to cover for contingencies, is there a problem there carrying really a bat-first guy? I guess what I'm asking is this team in position to carry a bench bat who can't do other things?
Well, that's a great question, Matthew. I think they need to, because the last 2 years, it's been terrible. But, you know, you hope that Tyler Moore seems to get it now, being on the bench. He's having a great year, spring, I should say. And Tony Gwynn Jr. has done well. I think he's going to make this team now because of the injury to Span. I have to say, yeah, I think they can afford to do that. And that's where Clint Robinson fits in. Ian Stewart fits in if Rendon don't make it, so doesn't make it. So we'll see what happens, and it could happen.
All right. Well, Bill Ladson, thanks for taking some time to chat here on MLB.com Extras.
Talking Atlanta Braves, MLB.com's Braves beat reporter, Mark Bowman. Mark, you had an interesting piece this week looking at the kind of culture change in the Braves clubhouse. It's been such a big part of who that organization has been for a very long time, that sort of winning mentality. And even as a stat head, somebody who doesn't necessarily think we can measure that stuff, clearly it's something organizations value. How big a part of that offseason rework of the roster was that culture, that leadership, that aspect of it beyond just the baseball aspect?
Well, I think it was very important, especially when you look at the one-year type of deals where they said, look, we're going to bring an A.J. Brzezinski in here to help mold Christian Bethencourt and provide maybe a little edge to the clubhouse. Nick Markakis, they see it. You know, he's the guy that they hope produces on the field and also provides a good value in that clubhouse. You look at I think that's the primary guy. The reason they went after him was the kind of influence that he can have on some of the younger players, and he really did on Freddie Freeman. It was the first day of live batting practice, and Freddie Freeman sitting there getting ready to face Kimbrel and Teron. He goes, oh, no, yeah, great. That first time in six months seeing live pitching in this suit, who I got to see. And Gomes like, come on, man. You know, this is what we got to get ready for. And, you know, he just brings a little bit of energy and changes that attitude where, you know, you saw a little bit too much of that around the Braves. And Freddie Freeman wasn't saying anything wrong. He was actually just trying to be funny. But I think Gomes just kind of wants to, you know, provide that little extra spark that was missing here last year. And it was really no fault of the guys that were there as much as they just haven't been around long enough. And they kind of wanted to provide some building blocks for Pendleton Simmons, Freddie Freeman to learn how to be leaders in the future.
The biggest seemingly competition story, on-field story that's been going on with the Braves this spring, it seems like remains the back of that rotation. I've got a couple questions about that. One is the ongoing story of Mike Minor. Where is he at right now? What are they thinking as far as when he might be ready and what the situation is with him?
Yeah, it's definitely a to-be-determined type of thing. Mike Minor started throwing on flat ground 2 days ago. He's basically throwing for 60 feet. We're not going to learn anything from this as he builds up his arm strength. His arm was fine after he rested for 3 months after battling shoulder discomfort all of last year. And that right there is what should probably give you concern. He rested for 3 months, and during his second live BP, in other words, he's just starting to amp things up, his shoulder starts to bother him again. So we could get to a point where Mike Minor for the next 2 weeks can say, I'm fine. He may go and make one or two rehab starts and still say he's fine. But you just have to wonder if what Dr. Andrews prescribed, which was basically let's do these stretching exercises, let's quit lifting the upper body, let's see if we can make the shoulder as loose as possible to prevent a reoccurrence of what occurred last year where the shoulder just bothered him all year. So right now, you know, if all goes well, Mike Minor could be there in early May, maybe, in the rotation. Right now, I think you've got to look at I think the Braves have to take a step back and say, look, Wandy Rodriguez and Eric Stoltz are probably our two top candidates for the rotation. But then you say, okay, do you want to put two similar left-handers back-to-back in the rotation? The other part of that equation is this. You put Wandy on the rotation, it's $2 million right away. Eric Stoltz is $1 million right away. You want to make that kind of commitment, not knowing whether you're going to be paying them for just 1 month. For an extended period. So it'll be decisions to be made. One guy that could benefit from the fact that there are some questions about how long Minor can be out. And if the Braves don't want to make that financial commitment to both Wandy and Stoltz, then all of a sudden Cody Martin, a guy who's not going to impress you with stuff or velocity or anything, he may step in there and then fill that fifth spot.
One of the guys that it seemed like might have an opportunity to take advantage once the stuff with Minor started going on was Mike Foltynewicz, and that just doesn't seem to be happening. It's I think notable just because it's kind of the same thing that's always been his rep. Huge arm, still doesn't command it well enough. Is he at least showing progress? Does it at least seem like he's getting there as far as location?
Yeah, well, you know, when we talked last week, Matthew, we were in between starts. He had two bad ones, and then when we talked last week, we were talking about the start he had had against the Yankees the week before, which you saw him, you know, locating the fastball, commanding his off-speed pitches, showing, you know, mixing his pitches. The repertoire was there. What we saw from him on Tuesday during his most recent start was a guy who was – he struggled to get ahead with the fastball. That provided some problems. Now, all of a sudden, he's not – you know, now all of a sudden you're not ahead. Now you're trying to go to your off-speed stuff. He's not throwing that for strike. And then, you know, to make matters worse, somewhat showed his youth when, you know, hey, look, maybe he got squeezed by Joe West when he walked the pitcher, the Phillies pitcher, starting pitcher there, Gonzalez, I believe it was. When he walks in, maybe that's he's flustered. Okay, now he comes back and issues another walk. Okay, now he gets out of that with a bases loaded strikeout. But the next inning, he makes a bad pitch to Brian Howard. He hits one out. Well, the next pitch, he's flustered again, and he gives up a home run. That's the kind of stuff that you know, when you see that, it just gives you more reason to think he could use a little bit more time, not only to develop, you know, pitches, but maybe to mature at the minor league level. He's got a lot of potential. I think the question still remains, though. This kid has incredible stuff. Is he going to be a starter or a reliever? And I think it's too early to tell.
And that actually, you predicted my next question, which is it in fact far too early to start thinking about maybe seeing what this guy can do in a short burst?
Yeah, I think it is too early. I think you've got to give him at least this year, or, you know, maybe you see enough of him this year, you make that decision. But Yeah, I think he's a guy that he's up. There's no doubt he could be a back of a valuable back of the type of guy. I think you need to give him another full year of starting here at the AAA level at least, and see where, you know, make your evaluation from there. But I won't be surprised if he does end up in the bullpen. I don't think that'll shock anyone.
Mark Bowman, thanks for taking some time to chat here on MLB.com Extras. Talking New York Mets with MLB.com's Mets beat reporter, Anthony DiComo. Sounds like it was a big worry and it looked really bad, but it sounds like ultimately Wilmer Flores is going to be all right. What exactly is his status right now?
Yeah, I mean, he was hurting pretty bad, but it was a bone injury in the foot. It wasn't a muscle type thing. And while those, you know, can tend to hurt a lot more, they don't tend to linger necessarily unless something's broken, which something was not, which was a huge sigh of relief for the Mets. He's actually back to game action now. He's back to full bore go ahead. So he's no issue for opening day. And that's a good thing because, you know, the Mets are obviously a big piece that they're counting on. They want to see if he's the guy at shortstop long term or if this experiment is not going to work. So if he hadn't been healthy for opening day, that really would have put a crimp in their plans. But he should be good to go and with no lingering effects from this injury.
As you know, there's not exactly a really good plan B. But with that said, it does seem like, from what I've heard, they're pretty pleased with what they've seen from him this spring. What are you seeing from Flores before he got hurt, both in the field and at the plate?
Well, he's raking. He's absolutely raking, which is huge because, you know, we've talked so much about his defense and is he good enough to stick his shortstop? Is he just overmatched there and so on and so forth? But the fact of the matter is if he hits, that'll cover up a lot of holes. And the whole reason why the Mets are giving him this chance versus going out and getting someone over the winter, making a trade, going with a prospect, whatever, is because they still really like his offensive potential. I mean, this is a guy who's been in the system forever and really didn't hit for a long time as a prospect, despite the fact that those tools were there. He finally started hitting about 2 years ago and hasn't really stopped. So if he can translate what he's doing here in the minors, I mean, here in spring training, showing a ton of gap power, doubles power, he's put a couple over the fence. If he can translate that into the regular season, you know, even if he's a below-average defensive shortstop and it's hurting them on defense, you know, they'd be okay with that because there's not a lot of good offensive shortstops in the major leagues. And if he can be one of those guys, that's huge. And all of a sudden the conversation shifts from a guy who maybe isn't that good defensively to a guy who's a real asset to the lineup.
And has he looked at least adequate? I mean, he has at least looked like somebody who can handle shortstop?
The scouting report, you know, hasn't really changed from what we saw towards the end of last year, which is he's going to make the plays at him. Now, he doesn't have a lot of range. I don't think that's a secret to anyone. The throwing arm leaves a little bit to be desired. But he is going to make the plays at him, which, you know, frankly, was a worry back in the day. So, you know, while his ceiling is maybe that of an average shortstop, I think he's getting pretty close to hitting that versus a guy who's really going to hurt you on defense. You know, strong up the middle, I know, is the old adage. And with Flores and Daniel Murphy playing shortstop and second base, respectively, you know, the Mets are not going to be strong up the middle. They're not going to have very much range at all there. But, you know, if both of those guys can make the plays that are right at them, that's at least something given the offense that they're giving you.
And you tee it up perfectly like an old pro. What's the status of Murphy? Because there's clearly some worry about his health as well.
He's a little iffier. He's dealing with a hamstring strain, and unlike what I was talking about with Flores, those do tend to linger. He's not back to doing all of his baseball activities yet. That could still be another couple days. And you know, what the Mets are going to try and do is just to ramp him up really quickly. Once he gets the okay medically to go, they'll put him in minor league games. They'll have him get 12, 14 at-bats in a game, whatever it might be, just so he can get his timing back. You know, what they have to be careful about with him is if they're going to put him in a big league game, in a Grapefruit League game, they need to be sure that he's ready on opening day, because if they have him play one of those in the last week of camp, all of a sudden they're not going to be able to backdate potential DL stint as far back as they would have if he doesn't play, if he sticks to minor league games. So if you see Murphy, you know, playing in a Grapefruit League game, the Federal League camp, that's a very good sign. That means they're confident that thing is going to heal. And it's going to be another few days, maybe even a week before we know for sure. But in the meantime, he's going to get his work in. He's going to keep getting treatment. Once he's ready, he's going to start getting those at-bats in minor league games. So, and, you know, probably towards the middle of next week is when we'll know for sure if he's a go for opening day or if it's maybe we're looking at a backdated DL stint that keeps him out for the first four or five games.
And what's plan B if they have to do without Murphy for a while?
Well, if it's only going to be a few games, they've got a guy, Danny Muno, in the minors who can come up, who can fill that spot. And then Ruben Tejada, you know, who's going to make the team anyways, can start there at second base. He's done it before. He's perfectly capable of doing that. If for some reason it's going to be a long time, if he restrains it, aggravates it, whatever, that could open the door for a Matt Reynolds type to come in and make the team, whereas otherwise he wouldn't. But really those are all probably looking a little too far down the line, contingency plans. It's either going to be Murphy or Tejada starting there on opening day, just depending on whether or not Murphy's healthy.
And what's the story with Bobby Parnell? He recently did get on the mound, pitch in a minor league game. A lot of talk about his velocity. Was this sort of what was expected, or was it concerning that he wasn't coming anywhere close to lighting up the gun?
I guess it depends if you're an optimist or a pessimist, because I mean, when you talk about Bobby Parnell, it's always been velocity with this guy. You know, when he first came up, he threw 100. And while he hasn't really approached that in recent years, he was still sitting 95. He could still dial it up to 97, 98 when he wanted to before he got hurt. And you talk about Tommy John surgery, you talk about these guys coming back. The one thing you don't really worry about that much is velocity. That's the thing that tends to come back the quickest. So the fact that he's starting to pitch in games now and he's only at 89, 90, 91, he hit 92 once the other day. You know, the fact that you're looking at those radar gun readings could be a little troubling. Now, the other side of that is you can say he's 11 and a half months out of Tommy John surgery right now. Sort of the studies, at least the Mets internal studies, have shown that they don't expect a guy to be fully back, fully ready until 14 months out. So he's got a little time to ramp it up. He said himself that he wasn't really going full bore in that game where he was clocked at 91, 92. He was working more at two-seam fastball, which is a couple ticks lower than his four-seamer anyways. So, you know, you can read into all of that and say, well, let's give it another month. Let's see where he's at in mid-April instead of mid-March, because the Mets really don't expect him back at this point until May. I would say 3 or 4 weeks down the line, if he's still showing those velocity readings, then you might have an issue. But for now, I think the Mets are giving him the benefit of the doubt. But it is. For a guy who's defined by his velocity, it is a little bit scary to see that.
All right. Well, Anthony DiComo, thanks for taking some time to chat here on MLB.com Extras.
Talking Miami Marlins with MLB.com's Marlins beat reporter, Joe Fusaro. Joe, the Marlins once again made big news, as has kind of been the pattern all winter into spring now, by doing something they really wanted to do, which was getting a deal done with Christian Yelich. What sort of, either on player or club side, enabled this to become a done deal?
Well, it's kind of interesting, Matthew, because coming into the offseason, retaining core or trying to sign some of those core pre-arb guys like Yelich was a high priority. And the irony is that what they kind of wanted to do first, they ended up doing last. So obviously Stanton was first in terms of big picture, what they wanted, they got him taken care of. But I think they always felt before opening day, they could revisit Yelich, who was among Yelich, Jose, Ozuna, and Echeverria. His camp seemed most agreeable to getting the long-term deal done. Getting it done by opening day was big because the player didn't want that hanging over his head. They approached, got dollar figures that, you know, it's hard to get a comp salary-wise for a guy with 1.5 year service time. They initially kind of worked off of like a Jed Jerko's deal in San Diego, and then they kind of got to the Anthony Rizzo, which was 7 years, $41 million with the Cubs a couple of years back, and they kind of grew from there, and they were able to finalize it a couple of days ago. Huge, huge pickup. I think the message it sends is very big internally to the clubhouse, to the player. Now you got your two corner outfielders locked up for a long time. They could play free of any contract distractions. Great sign for the community as well, and that they mean business. And a kid who could be a future batting champ. He's already been a Gold Glove winner, a very exciting player in Yelich, and a real priority, and they achieved that.
He seems like kind of an unusual player. I'd be curious to hear what kind of player you think he becomes, because I've seen his bat compared to a guy like Joe Mauer. He's got the defense in the outfield. He's kind of an unusual player. Is there anybody you could kind of... He's a very good player, but I feel like he's kind of maybe not as well known as he is good. What kind of player does this guy become, do you think?
Yeah, he could be a little bit of everything. I don't think he's going to be a real big power guy. Dan Jennings, Marlins GM, compared him a little bit to a Don Mattingly in terms of an approach. I don't know if he's ever really going to hit more than 20 homers, if that's going to be his game. I know they think he has a chance to be a number three hitter. He's a young 23. He turned 23 in December. He's very lean. His game is tailored to get on base, do things, be a really quality hitter. He hits left-handed pitching very well as well. I don't think, you know, when they move Hanley from lead off to three, Hanley was a strong guy, you know, a couple of years ago. They got a strong guy who hits three in Stanton. There's really no urgency to move Yelich down the order. But he is a guy that maybe when he's 25, 26, could be a little bit more dominant power guy. He does have power. But Marlins Park isn't exactly where, you know, favorable to him in terms of those power numbers. So I think you're going to see a really good line drive guy. He runs really well. Covers a lot of ground, doesn't have the strongest throwing arm, but his overall game, he steals a bag, he runs the bases well. You're right, he doesn't necessarily compare to, I can't say, oh, this is, you know, a Justin Upton type of left fielder. He's not a singles hitter either. So, you know, here's a guy I think is going to hit a lot of doubles, Marlins Park triples as well. He's going to score close to 100 runs and drive in probably 60 or 70.
He apparently is dealing with a real minor physical issue. Is this anything to worry about at all?
No, and, you know, he probably would, obviously, if this was a regular season, he'd be in there. What he has on his right hand, on his palm of his right hand, kind of near the thumb, a little blister, which hitters tend to develop calluses swinging all the times they do. If this was regular season, he's playing. They decided just give him another day. He had been using a little pad inside his batting glove. He didn't find that comfortable at all. So rather than risk anything, he'll play this week. You know, he's going to make a trip to Lakeland and play the Tigers. He's really happy about that long drive. He'll be fine. But it is kind of ironic, and the joke's already made. The day after he signs a nearly $50 million contract, he has a blister on his signing hand.
The other guy they really hoped to get done was Marcell Ozuna. It's not done. Opening day is getting closer. Is it fair to guess that for a variety of reasons, including his representation, that is going to be a tougher nut to crack?
Yeah, it really is. Scott Boras represents Jose Fernandez and Marcell Ozuna. Ozuna is still, I have to do the math in my head, but he's still several years away from being free agent. He'll be arbitration next year. But I think they have 4 years because he was a Super 2. If he puts up 25, 30 home runs, it's going to be really interesting because he's going to make a lot of money that first year arb. Now, there'll be peer pressure that, hey, I could get a long-term deal, or are they going to ride me out for 4 years? You know, so the way they look at it, they have him for another 4 or 5 years regardless. But they really like that outfield trio, and I think as they grow older, I think Major League Baseball and its fans, more than just South Florida, are going to realize just how good these guys are. And if they could retain all three, that would be great. And they're all three homegrown as well. So Ozuna is a guy who's not going to get done anytime soon. But, you know, Marcell even said perhaps next offseason they'll play it by ear. And I would think that would be the time. If it goes too much further after that, I think it's going to be very doubtful to get an extension.
You wrote recently that it appears that the Marlins' rotation is set. There was some question as to what the back of the rotation would look like. Had some guys make strong cases. Even if it's not announced, how did that kind of come to get done?
Yeah, they kind of never wavered off their main five, for one. I mean, the number five spot's the one that was the most up in the air. That was Tom Kohler, the incumbent, who had, 30 starts last year, did a really good job in his first full year in the big leagues. And he had Brad Hand, who's worked both out of the pen and rotation. He would be the only lefty. and David Phelps, who they got in the trade with the Yankees, who they really like, but he's really kind of that swing guy and gives them that really good insurance policy. And, you know, the battle scene between those three. Well, more and more, Kohler was getting the benefit of the doubt, getting the, you know, the incumbent's edge. And I don't really see, other than an injury or a trade or something like that, that's going to take anything off there. So I think you're looking at Tom Kohler, who had a stronger camp last year. He really made a name for himself in spring training. Hasn't had as good a camp this year, but they know what they got. They like his toughness. They like his durability. And they think his stuff is really good, too. He needs to throw more strikes. But, you know, for a fifth starter, yeah, it looks like he's going to be the guy.
That was probably the biggest question facing this club coming into camp as far as a position battle kind of thing. What else is left to be done over these last week and a half with roster spots?
Yeah, Matthew, this is the most interesting in all the years I've covered this team in terms of really very, very few spots open. I mean, maybe one, maybe two in the bullpen, and maybe one or two bench spots. And so it's, you know, they already got, you know, like a Derek Dietrich who was hoping to contend for that utility spot. They knew he wasn't going to make it. They were wanting to get him. They cherish his bat, and they want to see him play every day. So they got rid of him pretty fast in camp. So you got guys like Donovan Solano, Reed Brignac, who's had a strong camp, Don Kelly, who could play everywhere but pitch, it seems like. You got those guys all in that, you know, and Scott Sizemore's there. Then you have, you know, they're all for that utility spot. Now, do they carry a fifth outfielder? If so, is that Reed Johnson, who's a right-handed batter, who was a pinch hitter last year with this club? Tyler Colvin has been in camp and done a good job. Cole Gillespie. I mean, you got a lot of guys. And the wild card is, will they go with only 12 position players because they like their pitching and their depth that they may feel in April with the poor weather and may need more pitching? Do they go with 13 pitchers to start, which is 8 relievers? I don't know if the manager wants that, you know, but there are some, you know, roster stuff that come into play. So you're looking at maybe one or two bullpen spots. And, you know, you have a guy like a Nick Massett, who they really liked, who they got as an on-roster invitee, who was very good several years ago with the Reds, but had injury situations, played last year with the Rockies, showed he could get back to the big leagues. But this Andrew McCarrahan is very curious because he's a lefty who doesn't pitch above A ball. He's a Rule 5 pick, who I don't think is going back to Chicago. And that doesn't mean he's going to be a Marlin, but there are about 20 scouts every day that would take him right now, and he would be on their big league team. So the Marlins could flip and trade him. But the same reasons that those clubs want him, the Marlins like him too, because young, cheap, affordable left-handed pitching with upside. He's a guy, if Brad Hand is traded, and it seems like if there is a trade, he is most likely that could open up a spot, or if they carry that extra pitcher. Interesting battles. Don't take anything for granted, and anything's still possible. I wouldn't be surprised if they make a trade or two. And as before, we had opening day, and who might fall off the trees from another club that might fit here. So really, really interesting camp, but in terms of openings, you're only looking at 2-3 spots, and I just gave you the candidates.
Well, Joe Fusaro, thanks for taking some time to chat here on MLB.com Extras.
Talking Philadelphia Phillies with MLB.com's Phillies beat reporter, Todd Zielecki. Todd, it continues to be a camp with a lot of odd news around the Phillies, and the latest is not good. It's not affecting the Major League club, but there's really nothing more important in this organization going forward than J.P. Crawford. And he sounds to dealing with injury. It sounds like it's not too severe, but what's the situation with that?
Yeah, I talked with Joe Jordan, who's the Phillies' director of player development, and he just kind of felt it fielding ground balls. Didn't really, you know, jerk it while taking a swing, which is sometimes how these things happen. Seems like whenever a guy takes a bad swing and he strains his oblique, it ends up lingering a little bit longer. So he said they'll know more maybe in the next week how long it might take, but they've thrown out the 4 to 6 week recovery time. And, yeah, certainly not good news because, like you just said, they need their prospects to develop and you know, kind of move on in a straight line. But they don't think it's anything crippling. It's not a season-ending injury or injury that they think will linger several months in the season that will curtail his development. So I think what they're hoping is, you know, maybe miss a month, maybe like I said, 4 to 6 weeks, and then he'll kind of come back, be healthy, and and continue to progress and take that next step forward this season. He was going to start the season in Class A, Clearwater, and then they were planning on maybe him getting up to Double A Reading some point mid-season. And quite frankly, if he comes back mid-May, late May, and plays pretty good, I still think you'll see him at Reading at some point.
Up until this point, what had the club seen from him this spring?
Well, you know, same thing. Just a lot of talent, a good eye at the plate. You know, he's really shown kind of some maturity at the plate. Last season with Class A Lakewood and Class A Clearwater, he showed he has a little bit of power. He's got some speed, and really has earned that number 22 prospect ranking in Major League Baseball by MLBPipeline.com. They are really, really high on him, and they're really excited about his potential. You know, he's not a big league guy this year. He might not even be a big league guy next year. He's only 20 years old, but this is a guy that they think eventually will be Jimmy Rollins' long-term replacement. Freddie Galef is kind of holding the fort down right now, but they think this guy could be a middle-of-the-order, top-of-the-order type of player, perennial all-star type of guy. And he really had not done anything that kind of diminished that talk this spring.
You mentioned Galvis, and you had a piece on him yesterday, on him looking for anything to be a little more of an impact hitter. What do you think is reasonable to expect of Galvis? Do you think it's at least reasonable to expect him to hit enough to hold an everyday job?
That's what they're hoping. You know, he didn't show that last season. He showed a little bit of that a couple years ago. Honestly, Matthew, I think if they could get Freddie Galef to play great shortstop defensively, which is his forte, he is above average defensively. I think they would be happy if he hit in the 230, 250 range. You know, OPS in the 650, 700 range, you know, as a number eight hitter in this lineup. I think if he can just produce that much and play good defense, I think they'll take it. But, certainly last year he was nowhere near that. And in the minor league career, quite frankly, he had not been much better than that. So if they can get that, I think they'll take it. And if it's worse than that, I think they'll kind of be in a tough spot going forward because they really don't have anybody that can step in and replace him right now.
One guy who has been encouraging this spring is Odubel Herrera. He sounds like he has a chance to be the rare Rule 5 guy who doesn't just stick but has a prominent role. What's that looking like right now?
I tell you what, he has been a good surprise. You knew kind of coming in scouts you talked to, that you know the guy can hit a little bit. You know, he won the batting title in Double A last year in the Texas League. He won the batting title this winter in Venezuela in winter ball. But you know, those things are what they are. You know, it doesn't necessarily mean he's going to be successful at the big league level. But he really has continued to hit up here, and he really has opened some eyes. And I mean, if there is a more surefire lock to make the team around baseball as a Rule 5 pick, I'd love to see it because now it's looking to the point that he might not even just make the team. He could become a regular in the Phillies' lineup. And not only that, I would not be stunned at this point if he's in the opening day lineup. Ryan Sandberg has played Ben Revere in left field and Odubel Herrera in center field. I think like their last four or five starts together, that's been the situation. Which tells you Ryan Sandberg and the coaching staff is thinking about something. They like Odubel Herrera in center field. They think he's more comfortable in there. So if you're moving your everyday center fielder to left field, that kind of tells you that this is you're not going to mess with your everyday center fielder unless you plan on playing Odubel Herrera fairly regularly. So that is something definitely worth watching as the spring winds down. And like I said, I would not be surprised if he's in that opening day lineup.
How does that happen? How does a guy with the kind of ability, apparently, to be at least a contender for an everyday roster spot, get left off of 40 and become a pick in the Rule 5? This is the kind of thing that used to happen under the old Rule 5 setup, but really doesn't happen anymore.
Yeah, you know, it is kind of a mystery. You know, everything I heard is just that the Rangers weren't that high on him. Obviously, he was the second baseman in the Rangers' system. They just didn't think that much of him as maybe some other scouts around baseball thought of him. You know, when the Phillies drafted him, they said, listen, the guy's played second base mostly for the Rangers. He's played a little bit of shortstop, but we look at this guy as an outfielder. We look at this guy as a top-of-the-lineup center fielder type of guy that has some flexibility and the potential to play in the corner. So the Phillies just kind of looked at him in a different way. And, another big factor is, they're so desperate for bats. I think that they thought that that he was worth taking a chance on. And I remember Mike Onda, who's the pro scouting director, said one of the first things he said after the Rule 5 draft is, we consider this guy a prospect. So he's not just they didn't look at him as just let's take a flyer on him, see if this guy can hit, maybe he can stick around a little bit, or maybe he can be a nice player. They actually looked at him in a much different way than the Rangers. They thought this guy has legitimate prospect potential to be an everyday player, and right now he's definitely trending in that direction.
All right, well, Todd Zalecki, thanks for taking some time to chat here on MLB.com Extras, and thanks everybody for listening.